A Field Guide to American Houses is written by my mother, Virginia Savage McAllister. It was the country's first and most definitive guide to typical American architecture. It was originally published in 1984 and is still a bestseller among architecture books today. It's used extensively. It's used in architecture school. It's used by preservationists as a manual for their preservation efforts. It's used by realtors who are selling old homes and newer homes as well. It covers homes pretty much up to the present day, up until about 10 years ago.
Welcome to Journey with Purpose, episode 28. This is your host, Randy Plummel. If we haven't met, I'm a former architect, now public sector designer, who is fascinated about our expeditions in life, which are our journeys with purpose. I'm about to drop a giant book. That was A Field Guide to American Houses. All 848 pages of it. It's written and edited by Virginia Savage McAllister. I love typologies and categorizing things. It really feeds something deep inside of me that I love just to open it up and take a look at. It also, as a designer, it also helps me cheat a little bit because I can take a look at what's been done before and work with clients, especially around prototypes. We can use some of these inspirations. If you twirl the pages, you will see amazing photos and diagrams of many different types of American houses. This book also was a great guide and influence when I did my participatory art project in front of MoMA PS1 called Block Builder. You can see that information in the show notes. Amy and I had a really great conversation about what it means to honor excellent work, how that work came together, and how does it live on in both future versions and in other mediums. Amy, nice to meet you and welcome to Journey with Purpose. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Amy Talkington, and I'm calling or Zooming from Los Angeles, California. And I am a writer, director, producer of films and TV. And the reason I'm here today is because I'm the daughter of Virginia McAllister.
So tell us about your mother. Who was she and what did she make?
Sadly, she's not with us anymore, but Virginia Savage McAllister, the name that she went by on her books, was an architectural historian, preservationist, and author, most notably of A Field Guide to American Houses. She was lots of other things, too. A Field Guide to American Houses was the first book. It was published in 1984 originally, and it was the first book to break down and define the styles of the typical American house. It's really a reference book. It's been called, I've heard by many preservationists and architects, the Bible, because it's very painstakingly and thoughtfully researched and full of incredible information about the typical American home. And I think a big part of that, I keep saying typical, because one of the things that differentiates this book from other books that have been published at the time is that it wasn't just looking at like the grand classic styles of architecture. It was really wanted to help you figure out why the houses you walk past every day looked the way that they looked.
So I'd love to know more about how your mom researched the book. I heard that sometimes she brought you and some of your siblings on some of the research trips. I want to hear that story.
So mom and her then husband, Lee McAllister, we hit the roads and looked at houses all over the country to make the book happen. I was pretty young when we were doing that. On the road, we would really just driving from city to city, town to town. They did a lot of trips without us, but the ones that we were on, I can remember just creeping slowly through neighborhoods, looking at houses. And occasionally my mom, which is, this is a theme throughout her life, stop the car. You stop, jump out and take a picture. She took most of the photographs in the original field guide. Her later partner, Steve Click, took a lot of the pictures in the revised edition. And probably there was a lot of complaining coming from the back of the Good Times van. We were in a giant brown custom Good Times van. It was not the kind of, I remember it was like my grandfather knew somebody who had this extra van. So we got some crazy deal on it because there were four kids. Lee had two kids and I had my brother. There were four of us and we were all in the back of this shag carpet extended brown van driving around the country. And occasionally people would get angry and why are you taking a picture of my house? And there were plenty of times we peeled out, but mom was very steadfast in her right to stand on public property and take a picture of a home.
Well, I have to know more about this Good Times van with the brown shag carpet.
Oh my gosh. It was, let's see, 2 captain seats up front and then 2 club seats behind that. And then behind that, a sort of seating area, like 2 love seats and a little chair with a table. And I think there were tables next to the club seats too, or in between the club. So it was a big setup. And what was, of course, most exciting to us when we got it, probably in early, mid 70s, there was a hookup for a television in the van. And of course, my parents didn't put a television in the van, but just the thought that there was a hookup for an actual television in the van was mind-blowing to us, though we never had it. But we did have our 8-track player, and we played a lot of the Outlaws record with Waylon and Willie, and we played, I don't know, whatever we could talk them into. Oh, Steve Miller. He's from Dallas, so my mom had actually gone on a double date with him once. So we would listen to a lot of Steve Miller and just driving through the streets of America.
So your mom did a ton of research, sometimes with the whole family, sometimes by herself. Can you tell us about A Field Guide to American Houses? What is this book?
The book is really born from her love of Dallas and her love of her neighborhood in Dallas, the Swiss Avenue Historic District, which wasn't a historic district before she got her hands on it. And the book was also born of her preservation efforts to save that neighborhood. The story is that she's a 5th-generation Dallasite. Her great-grandmother was one of the early settlers of Dallas. And she just comes from a line of very strong Dallas characters and also public servants in a way. Her grandfather was a lawyer. He is the lawyer that impeached the only successful impeachment of a Texas governor, Pa Ferguson. Her father was mayor, and her mother was also an activist for preservation. But also, they were just people who, they were doers, and they were all about doing things for their community. So they did all kinds of things for the community, one of which, my mom's sister was born deaf and with cerebral palsy, and they were discouraged from educating her. There really wasn't a place to educate her. So my grandparents started a school called the Dallas Academy, and she graduated from high school there, and that school is still there. So these people, they were doers. And so I think that is probably, that's in her blood to do it and do it as well as you can and fight as hard as you can. And that came across in her preservation efforts and also in this epic task of putting together this book.
Can you tell us more about her background and early life? How did that prepare her to complete this book?
First of all, she's extremely bright. She went to Radcliffe College. She studied architecture there. So she had that base knowledge. She was extremely thorough and research oriented even before getting into this. I think this is by far, obviously, the largest research project or task she ever took on. But she's just a researcher. There's a funny story. She wanted to take my daughters, her granddaughters, to Washington, D.C. And if you were traveling somewhere, you would get books about it, read books about it. You would create a detailed itinerary. We would visit, like, you don't just casually visit somewhere. You research it. You plan the best possible itinerary, the most thorough coverage of it. And I remember halfway through the trip, my kids, they were like maybe 7 and 9 at the time. One of them looked up at me like at 4 p.m. having hit the pavement since 9. And they were like, I thought this was a vacation. You know, my mom was just very thorough and dedicated to knowledge in everything that she did. But I think most of all, it was really, truly a love and passion for her community and her neighborhood. And Swiss Avenue really is a beautiful collection of old homes, and not just Swiss Avenue, Munger Place, Junius Heights, all the neighborhoods around there, all of which she was instrumental in turning into historic districts. And she just loved and appreciated from a young age. She used to tell a story of her mom would sometimes take her, they would go look at a house for sale or a house in the neighborhood that was for sale. And she would go in the bathroom. She would always disappear into the bathroom because she would just study all the details. And that was the room where she could really look at all the fixtures and the details. She was just in love with architecture and its details, and ultimately just became so fascinated with the stories that the architecture could tell and that every detail told about the history and what was going on at that time.
Can you give us the origin story of where the idea for the field guide came from?
When she came back from Radcliffe, the neighborhood had been declining for years, and a lot of the homes were becoming like boarding houses. But I think the real precipitating factor was they were going to tear down a few homes to build an apartment complex. And so a bunch of neighbors banded together to try to keep that from happening and then to try to turn it into a historic district. And during that process, they had to identify the style of each home in that area in order to, as a part of the application. And she went to the library to find the book that would help her do that and realized there was no book. That's where the idea came from. It came directly out of that preservation effort. So they brought a surveyor in who helped them identify those homes, and they got the district set up and they started to set up other districts. But that seed was there, like, why doesn't this book exist? Like, why can't I walk down the street and understand why things look the way they look? And her husband, Lee McAllister, was a professor of geology and had written several textbooks on geology and the earth. And the thing she used to say, quoting him, she would say, Lee said to me, if I can write a book about the earth, certainly you can write a book about houses, right? As if it was going to be so easy. And so she thought, yeah, I'm going to write the book on houses. And she just set off to do it and put in the years and years of research to do it properly. I think once she started something, she always wanted to do it the best possible way. So it's just always interesting to me that it came from that idea of going to the library, like, where's this book? Why doesn't it exist? And I want other people, not only preservationists, to be able to save their neighborhoods if they want to, but I also just want other people to be able to understand why their house looks the way it looks and to know if they're replacing a window, why it should look a certain way if they want to keep it in keeping with the style. I don't think she knew what a huge project it was going to become when she set about to do it.
Can you speak more about that passion? We talked earlier about you were part of some of those research trips, but did I hear a story correctly that you were actually dragged into some direct action with the city and some of the houses your mom were trying to save?
We were dragged along. I'll speak for myself. I was dragged along to many of her preservation efforts. I was constantly at meetings, sitting when I was little under the table, basically, later on the outskirts, maybe with a homework book to read. We were dragged down to City Hall frequently, and occasionally something more dramatic, like this morning. Now, I was very small. I was very little. All I remember is that it was dark out. And I'm pretty sure she took me out of bed. I was sleeping, and she carried me to the car sleeping. My brother's 3 years older, so he was probably on foot. And I really didn't fully know what was going on. I knew there was a ruckus, but basically what happened was it had come to her attention sometime late in the night before that a house was going to be bulldozed, and she couldn't let that happen. And they were in process of trying to save it. And so she woke me and my brother up at 5 a.m., put us in the car and drove to the house and parked the car in front of the house to stop the bulldozers. And it wasn't so much, I'm going to take my kids and then they won't. It was more her husband, my dad, was probably at the hospital. She had to bring us because she couldn't leave us home alone. And it was effective. The house was saved. And she would occasionally go to such extreme measures. There was a similar event that happened in the early 2000s, and then the local news covered it. And I remember they were saying, it's cops meets this old house down on Bryan Parkway in Dallas. Virginia McAllister is parked outside this. She preferred to do the work more diplomatically. But if it came down to that, she'd park the car in front of the house and try to keep the bulldozers away.
I'd love to hear about how it felt and what you think about watching your mom do this momentous work and living through part of it and how that affected you and your work.
It's really the ethos that permeated me. It was not a particular interest in architecture, but it's this idea that what you're doing is so important that you'd almost give your life for it. You give everything you possibly can. You pour yourself into it and put everything on the line. And while I'm not in architecture, I do think I approach my work and my projects in a similar manner. I heard her, it's funny, it's not just the meetings, it was the phone calls, this is pre-email, because email became a great tool for her. And I wish she was phasing out her preservation efforts when social media was hitting, or actually wasn't phasing it out. She just never learned how to integrate them. She was still working hard, but pre-email, it was all about the phone calls, phone call after phone call, to talk to people about why certain building or effort or zoning issue was important. She would door to door on the phone talking to people constantly about these issues to try to make these preservation efforts fall into place.
for me, this work is quite momentous by itself. I have both editions of A Field Guide to American Houses, and the revised second edition tops out at 848 pages. Can you speak a little bit to the importance of your mom's work and the ongoing work that you are doing with it?
Yeah, well, I was thinking about it. I feel like it's changed over time. I feel like when it first came out, I didn't fully understand the enormity of the work and how important it was, of course. And I think more as a teenager, I was probably a little resentful of it because it had taken so much of my mom's time away from me. As I became a young adult and began to understand how important it was, I was in awe of it and the fact that she had created this tome. It's taken me a while because I'm not in the architecture or preservation community to really understand what it means to people. My first taste of it, I was one night at a dinner party, and the person I was seated next to mentioned that she sometimes did freelance. She did book cover design, and sometimes she works for Knopf. And I said, oh, wait, Knopf, that's my mom's publisher. And when I told her my mom's name, her jaw dropped. And she said, you do understand your mother's book is one of the crown jewels of Knopf. It's Julia Child's book and your mother's book. And so I didn't understand that. I had no idea. I knew it was still in print. I didn't understand that it was so rare that this book would carry on in this way and that it had such influence and that it was so important to the publisher. And now I'm beginning to. So now that I've launched the Instagram, and not myself, I have help with it, but I'm part of it and I'm involved in feedback and looking at messages and hearing messages from people from all over on hearing about what the book means to them. So now the book, I continue to stand in awe, but also now the book for me is a responsibility. It's a responsibility to try to carry it on and keep it alive. She just updated it, I think, less than 10 years ago. So it is still very current. And I want to keep it in the conversation. And that's part of the reason why I started the Instagram. And the other sort of effort that I took on immediately upon her death was how to finish the book that she was in the middle of. So she had been talking for probably 30 years about creating a field guide to American buildings. And she had been gathering photographs and research and studying and research and studying. And it took her a long time. She didn't want to approach it in the same manner as a field guide to American houses. She wanted it to be, I think, more concise. And it took her a long time to figure out her approach. Once she had her approach, she outlined it, and she was somewhere between a third and halfway through the text when she became unable to write anymore. And she was desperately trying to take whatever medical measures she could to try to survive to finish that book, because it had taken her so long. It was gestating for so many years. The publishing contract was for, I believe the publishing contract is for 93. I think the manuscript was due in 1993. But they were so patient. It's Virginia. They knew it would be brilliant when it was finished. And they waited patiently and waited patiently. And so once she finally knew what it was, she was actually writing quite quickly, but then became too sick to carry it on. She had a colleague she was working with on the book. In the end, once she cracked it, she was working with this woman, Evelyn Montgomery. And Evelyn, along with Willis Winters, who mom had collaborated on another book about Dallas architecture, agreed to come on and finish the book with her outline, and Knopf has agreed to publish it. And so that is in process, and it will be coming out in the next few years. So that's the next exciting step of trying to keep her legacy going.
The reason why we're talking today is that your Instagram, which is found at A Field Guide to American Houses, also in the show notes, popped up on my Instagram. Can you talk to us about the Instagram and how you're bringing your mom's work to life in different mediums?
Yeah, so the Instagram is really just a way to bring the book, to introduce it to new people, and to remind the people like you who love the book. Oh, not that maybe you didn't need reminding about it, but just to keep it in the conversation and the dialogue. So it's highlighting information from the book. We're basically doing a style a month, and we're introducing the style, and we're integrating photographs from the book. We're using just text from the book. I think we have hopes moving forward to create collaborations, I think to try to make it more interactive and have people uploading pictures more, identifying things. But right now, we're just setting the tone and the rhythm of this style a month idea and seeing where that leads us. Really just to have, it was such a natural place to have the book. We should have had it on there when Instagram started. And I know it was one of mom's, it was really one of her wishes, hopes and wishes. And she, perhaps that wasn't her strongest. I never talk about her weaknesses, but I think promoting her own material maybe wasn't her strongest suit. Instead, she was out on the street. She was involved in the preservation effort in Dallas, a house on Swiss Avenue called Aldridge House, right until the end, writing emails and making phone calls. So she couldn't tear herself away from that and from her book to focus on something like an Instagram. But she knew, she asked me to, and I think she also saw hope in her granddaughters carrying that on too. So she made it very explicit that she hoped that I would take it into social media and get it out there in that way. And I'm sad it didn't happen in her life, because I think she would have really loved to hear the feedback that I'm hearing.
So we've talked about the research, the book, but also can you talk about her activism in preservation in Dallas?
Her preservation efforts in Dallas were significant. She was one of the founders of, it was called the Historic Preservation League. Now it's called Preservation Dallas. She was the founder of Friends of Fair Park, the collection of Art Deco buildings that had been built for the World's Fair. The whole park was declining, and I think there was talk of getting rid of it and doing something else with it. She created a revolving fund for the Munger Place neighborhood, which is next to Swiss Avenue. And it was one of the first of its kind where they really had a very small amount of cash, but Fannie Mae came in with 90% loans to buy. So they would buy houses and rehab them somewhat and sell them. And it wasn't for any profit at all. It all stayed in this fund, and they managed to buy and rehab 23 houses. And she was also really proud of the State Thomas. It's a neighborhood in Dallas where she was part of the planning committee and working on the zoning there, which reintroduced the concept of dense mid-rise residential development with ground level retail and completely revitalized this neighborhood. And it's one of the most desirable places to live and have retail and office and everything now. She was always very proud of that. No one talked much about it. And then just this specific, like the Aldridge House, or there were so many cases along the way where she would just dig in and wouldn't stop and really put in so much time and effort to try to preserve some of that history of Dallas. And she roped anybody and everybody in. She would rope in my rock and roll friends from Deep Ellum. If they would show up, they were docents on the house tour. They would go to City Hall with her and her friends from high school. I mean, she would rope in whoever would come to support her cause, who believed in it with her. She volunteered me to work for the Historic American Building Survey and measure the buildings in Fair Park. And I guess the one that I was measuring, I'm not really sure why, but there was a building and then they had put this sort of deco facade on top of it. So I had to climb into the 3-foot crevice between the sort of building and the facade and measure that in 100 degree Texas heat, no air conditioning in sight. She volunteered us into any of these events that she could. We drew the line once. She wanted us, her kids, to go to, they were trying to sell bricks to raise money for Fair Park, bricks to put in the pathways. And she asked us to dress up like bricks and go to the Texas Jam, which is like a hard rock, heavy metal concert. We managed to convince her that we would probably be beaten to a pulp if we like showed up at the Texas Jam dressed as bricks. But she was really so convincing. She was a really remarkable combination. She was very hard to say no to. She was so gentle, so gracious, so smart, so not showy about her intelligence at all, so unpretentious. Like I said, I had no idea she was a superstar in preservation. She never mentioned it. I think she was aware, but she would just shrug it off or wave it off as she didn't fully believe it. She was someone people liked to help in her cause because they believed in her knowledge and her efforts, and she was just someone that everyone really loved and admired. Hi, I'm Amy Talkington, and I'm talking to you from Los Angeles, California, where I am a writer and producer of film and TV. And I am also the daughter of the well-known architectural historian, preservationist, and author, Virginia Savage McAllister, the author of A Field Guide to American Houses.
My thanks to Amy again for her time today and sharing with us stories of Virginia's amazing life, the contributions that she made to her family and to both history and architectural history. So I love A Field Guide to American Houses. I think you can hear it in my voice. I love all this information into one space. So I think this is a great thing. I would be amiss if I don't raise that there's a lot of tension inside neighborhoods today about which houses, which buildings, which parts of history are most valuable to save. We have a housing crisis in America. Where people want to live, we aren't building enough homes. The cheap and empty homes are in places that people don't want to live and are economically difficult for people to live in. And so when we're not building homes for people to live in, then everything gets more expensive. And that is primarily driving the increase in inflation right now, is the cost of rent, the cost of housing. Everything else has dropped back down to pre-pandemic levels. But the cost of housing continues to be an issue. And part of that is a supply issue. We're not building enough homes where people want to live. If you want to hear me talk more about my policy proposals for increasing all types of homes, there's a bunch of different podcast episodes. There's my King of Zoning episode where I have 10 policy proposals to increase housing availability and different housing types. There's the City of Yes overview. Most of my work here on the podcast is really talking about how do we have an abundance agenda. If you open up a field guide to American houses, you can see the abundance of different ways that we have housed people in the U.S. And as you get to the end of the book, you can see that the different ways that we've housed people have been reduced and it's becoming more of the same. It's creating less resilient housing stock for us because the way that we are living is different now. And so for me, a field guide to American houses is a call to build more and different housing so that people have the housing that they can afford and that meets their family needs and our needs. The thing is that that requires policy change. That requires us to get rid of parking minimums. It requires us to allow smaller lot sizes so that more homes can be built on given land. It requires missing middle, which we talked about last episode. So more 3, 4, 5-story houses that are multi-unit. It means allowing for commercial on the ground floor so you can have artist lofts or a cafe, an office, whatever. Things that we used to build in America that we have decided for really no good reason not to do anymore. So this is my most small C conservative viewpoint, is that we can go slightly back in time to give ourselves more freedom. And a field guide to American houses shows that we've done it before and it's uniquely American. All right. So that's enough of my soapbox today. This is Randy Plummel. This has been Journey with Purpose. All views on this are not necessarily the views of our employers, but you know that we have to make that disclaimer. If you want to listen more, go on to jwp.news, listen to the podcast, get it on Spotify, on Apple, on basically anywhere where you find good and mediocre podcasts. We're right there. If you like this episode, please give it some star ratings, thumbs up, share it with your friends, share it with your neighbors. That sort of non-monetary benefit helps the podcast keep growing and going. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you on the internets.